Hello, this is Tim's take on Doctor Who Trial of a Time Lord box set DVD signing that took place on Saturday, October the 4th, this past Saturday in fact, in Barking, East London. Present in terms of me and my friends were myself, Tim Drury, my friends Sanya Preston and Richard Leach was there as well, and also from the London-based Doctor Who meetup group were Chris Ellis and freshly arrived back in the UK from Canada, Chris Burgess, who some of you may know from the Radio Free Skaro podcast. The signing guests were composer-musician Dominic Glynn, who did the theme tune arrangement for Trial of a Time Lord and also a lot of the incidental music, actor Glenn Murphy, who played Dibber, actor Malcolm Tierney, whose character name escapes me at the moment, but he did write it on this photograph for me very kindly, and the writers Pip and Jane Baker, who wrote Terror of the Vervoids, and The Ultimate Foe, which was the conclusion to the story. So, up next is some audio of the Q&A of that signing, just after the signing. It may not be the clearest of audio, but thankfully people like Malcolm Tierney and Jane Baker seem to be quite good at projecting across the room. So hopefully you'll be able to hear what's being said quite clearly.
You've got some questions anyway.
No questions.
Jane, I want no questions.
So,
any questions for Glenn or anyone?
Someone must have bought all the colours before we got here.
Yeah.
Shut that door. I tell you what they did with the barn, it was all my hair. You know, imported.
The 80s.
Yeah. It was the 80s, you know. Big hair day, yeah.
Big hair, sure.
Consider art of a well-known self-attempting bump-off or a suicide, be it hanging from the roll until death or slashing wrist block with a broken shoehorn. most essentially to take the poet's highlight. Now, for this perfectly, our attorney Richard Wiss to Willie Lee Shakespeare, wrote many great works of art, including Plum Macduff, As You Like It, as we all like it, most famous of all, Hamlet. Now, Hamlet, he's saying, consider after a well-known self-attempted bump off or suicide. Toby or not Sir Toby, i.e. the Pastille. Let it be more haggled in the braille to souffle the strings and earlobes of outrageous fortune. Or to take arms against a plate of truffles. And with a poker, bend them. Too hard, too sweet. And by a sweet to say we end the arsake. And the thousand natural pots what flushes change to. Tis a flagellation, too fancy to be whipped. This being the consider after of all the well-known Larry driving and the fly piece of the zipsy tantrum fidget of the spilly art in which you can all the eyelamps or the giglobes. Or as my old grandma used to say to the mind, it is in the eye of the beauteous. E.g. a chain it fully flushes in pipe pot under the other pen and the sand eyes or flesh guns.
Came up with the idea. Actually, Pip and I were in Spain when that was all discussed. And John phoned us in Spain and said, John Nathan Turner, you know, he was the producer of the series. And he rang Pip and I and said, I've got a problem. I know the last one you wrote, which was Mark of the Rani, was all location. You know what location means, Patrick? It's not shot in a studio. It's all shot everywhere else. But he said, I now have got time in the studio, which means he had to shoot it all inside in the studio. So he said, could you come up with an Agatha Christie story to fit in with time of the with the Trial of a Time Lord? Is that right? Yes.
Agatha Christie is loyal. Murder mysteries, all set in one house, one place.
He knows Agatha Christie from the new series.
A number of characters.
Ah.
He does know.
So we said, well, we don't want to set it in a house, so we'll set it on a spaceship. So that's how we came up with the idea. And of course, we had to have a bit of a mystery. I might tell you, your dad will appreciate this, while we were writing it, we didn't give the whole four episodes to John, or John JMT, or Chris Clough. Was it Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. We gave them an episode at a time, and we discovered afterwards that in the control room... No, you wouldn't know that, would you?
I wouldn't know that.
They were having bets on who was the villain of the piece. A lot of them thought it was Malcolm. I can understand that, so would I have done.
So did you know right at the very, very beginning when you first started writing, you know who was murdered?
Yes.
You did.
Oh, yes.
You have to do it that way.
You have to know the end. Yes. And a lot of them thought it was the little waitress. Was she called Janet? I think she was called Janet. They apparently had bets. They didn't ask us. We could have had a good win. And then, to answer Patrick's question, then the last episode, we had written Terror of the Voivodes, which, as far as we were concerned, was the end of that. Then there was a problem, because the writer who had written episode 13, unfortunately, was taken ill. And he couldn't write episode 14, and so it's a bit too complicated for Patrick, perhaps, but we were asked if we would write episode 14. For the rest of you, I think we've told the story on the DVD of how we came to do it. I think perhaps it'd be a bit too complicated for Patrick. But for the rest of you, what happened was, Eric wrote episode 14, and JMT wasn't happy with it, and internal politics happened, and the next we knew, John phoned us, in desperate in his voice anyway, and asked us, would we go in to talk to him? Well, usually, as Pip will tell you, when we went to John's office, he'd have the car going, and he would tell me all the latest scandal at the BBC, which Pip didn't listen to, but I loved, and then we'd get on with what we were talking about. Well, actually, John was there with his desk and his name on it, and so was a lady we'd never seen before. And John said,
she was an expert in copyright, and there was a dispute between John and Eric Sayman that could have led to charges of payments. We never knew what the answer to the Trial of a Time Lord was going to be. None of the writers did. Only the one that was going to do the last two episodes. But unfortunately, it wasn't only just taken him; he had died. We were not told. We were writing the verb at the end of it. We were asked to insert certain episodes, you know, that business with the trial. They used to cut away, if you remember, to these so-called time with all the elderly actors dozing off in the trees. And we had no idea what it was going to be. She was there to see that John was not going to tell us anything of the episode that Eric had written.
Or what the end
had been for. So John asked if he would write then, and we asked John what the end would be, and he said, I can't tell you. We had read episode 13.
Oh, yes, I got through it, didn't I?
Yeah, he sent a courier with the episode 13, which we read. We thought when he sent that, there was trouble with us, but it wasn't, it was episode 13. And we asked him, what the hell is supposed to happen? you've got 13 episodes, you must know what the end is. So I can't tell you. And I said, well, we'll try. He said, yes, but I want it straight away because they're already rehearsing it down at the rehearsal rooms. So we had to deliver the score. He said, well, all right, we go across to Eric's old office. Eric was no longer there. If we can come up with an idea, we'll do it. And when we came back, he said, we've got one thing we're going to insist on. And he said, what's that? We're going to blow up that trial scene. Because it was an absolute... By the time it got to us, we let the verbal, was everybody had done it and done it and done it. We had to cut in, bring your story to go back to the trial scene with all these nodding men, looking as though they were interested. So that was the only thing we said. We wrote the episode in 2 days. We had to be writing longer in time. We had a problem, because when they got it in rehearsal, it ran, instead of the 28 minutes, it ran to 38 minutes. So we had to cut. We were able to reduce it to 30 minutes, and we couldn't get it down any further. In doing that, both fellow claimant Martin
and
no longer speak to us because they were not characters who we could cut their dialogue to get it down. Maybe we rehearsed it and wanted to keep it. They actually stood at the Olympics and ignored us. But anyway, the thousand we agreed to run it instead of 25 minutes for 30 minutes. And that was it.
Thank you.
So it's a long answer to your question.
He's given up his drawing now. Thank you.
Any other questions at all?
Go for it.
Behind the scenes, it was quite a controversial year. Did you actually enjoy working on it? Were you aware of any of the things that were going on behind the scenes?
What are they on there?
That's the answer.
No, we didn't. I didn't know any of this. Of course, you sort of know it roughly in the sense that before you get to do something, there's a lot of pre-production, meetings, tweaking this up, tweaking that up, bringing in, emphasizing a certain thing. All that's what, you know, makes the whole thing work for us. That preparation is the platform on which to, you know, play your character. It's the world of story. But it's all been drafted, redrafted, drafted again, tweaked up, polished. So we know that in general what that's going on in the background. But I didn't know the detail. I didn't know about the contract killings. You know, they used tennis and all that, and suitcases. Nobody cares. You always know that that's going on. It was a tight thing too, wasn't it? Well, the thing I remember about it was multi-episodic, and I made the mistake of saying to John, are you enjoying this? Yeah, but it's multi-episodic where you have to shoot 4 episodes. You shoot all the, hot house scenes, Wonka, for 4 episodes. And they all come at different parts of the episode. So you don't wait. You're just trying to get your mind around that. Then you shoot all the cafeteria scenes on board the spaceship for 4 episodes. And then you shoot all the, you know, between this and between that compartment, all in one. So it was like you just, you know, we didn't want, when you were on this earth, the bullets, as my mother used to say. But again, all that had to be worked out, the logic, the logistics.
Well, you cross-plot it when you write it, you know that's the way. You cross-plot it when you write it, you know that that's the way.
Yes.
Coming from film.
Yes.
A lot of us never used to do that. A lot of things in film, you always knew that when they built a set, wherever that set appeared in the story,
yes,
was going to be shot on those days.
Yes, on those days.
Not necessarily,
yeah,
in order.
Yeah, not necessarily in order. Back
to front. We have to remember is not to put actors, in various scenes.
Yes.
Where the principles would go right the way through.
I was amazed, actually, that it did work out. It didn't actually brain us too much. because that being taken care of to some extent.
It's difficult for the actors to know where the development of character and story goes.
Well, exactly. You didn't know where you were in the story, you know, whether you were coming or going.
So wasn't he wonderful?
I talk about behind the scenes, but I mean, as a composer, I think it's the first thing I'd ever done in television, so I just assumed all this backstage shenanigans was normal. I just assumed it always happened.
Yeah.
So
we weren't aware of the difference. We only became aware that there was problems when we started to do the verbal stuff. We met Eric for the first episode, Eric Sable, the script for me. And then suddenly he wasn't there. We had no script for him. We didn't meet a script editor until we finished Own Time of the Lines, followed on from there. He came in after we'd written. So we knew something was important, we didn't know what. And we kept out of it. One of the great things of being free, you don't get mixed up in the politics goes on in large bureaucracies.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Good fun.
Any other questions at all? There's a few people coming late, a few more bits, just want to be signed quickly. I'd like you to thank everyone for coming. Stay on the radio.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that Q&A. I have fond memories of Malcolm Tierney's appearance at it, who was surprisingly entertaining. I didn't realise he was going to bring us a monologue. And so there you go. That was the Q&A from the signing. Unusually, I can tell you what's going to be on the next Tim's Take On, because it is already in production. And that's that last Friday, me and my friend Sanya Preston both separately watched Little Britain USA's episode 1, and we will be bringing you our thoughts on it in the next Tim's Take On, which hopefully should be out before next weekend.